psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, the voice you trust for the family you love.
And so I realized that he wanted cancer to teach me. He wanted cancer to help me overrun that fear that I had.
It's a sad commentary on today's families that there are so many children that are deprived of love.
And finally, you said, "Listen to what?" And I held the phone down and Lincoln was screaming. And you said, "I'm a grandpa."
This is Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Ryan, I'm going to read one of my favorite scripture verses, James 1:27. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world.
Luann, it's a simple concept, but it leaves no doubt in our minds about what God expects of us as Christians. Mm-hmm. Orphans and widows are His priorities.
And they're going to be our priorities for today's broadcast, too, Ryan and Luann. There are millions and millions of orphans and neglected children around the world who are desperate for love and for care, for medical assistance, and just someone to love them. Mm-hmm. And we have two guests with us today who have been called by God to do what they can to help meet the needs of these children, and in this case, specifically in Romania. And they're trying to do that to the best of their abilities. And I am so honored to have them here today because I appreciate their hearts mm-hmm. for children and for the Lord. They're trying to do what that scripture says. So let me not use up any more of our time because there's a lot we want to talk about here. And I want to introduce the two ladies that I'm talking about. Who, by the way, just became acquainted with each other a little earlier today, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And yet you have the same mission or very similar mission. Now, the first is Sarah Birchtold, who is the president of Firm Foundations Romania. Sarah, you and Shirley and I are all friends with John and Mary Lois Gibson. Mm-hmm. They played a very key role in your life mm-hmm. and in getting you into Romania for this purpose, didn't they?
Yeah. They actually suggested Youth with a Mission because mm-hmm. they knew at that time I needed to do something different. I was in a place in my life where I needed to get away. Yeah. And fulfill the calling that God had eventually for me.
Mm. Well, John is a member of our board of directors, and they are just great people. Mm-hmm. And they introduced Shirley and me to you a few weeks ago. And I heard your story, and I also heard the cry of your heart mm-hmm. For those children of Romania. And I sure appreciate you getting on a plane and coming here to be with us for this occasion.
It's my pleasure.
There's a lot that you have to tell us. Also with us is Jackie Knight. I've known her for much longer. Jackie is the director of Romanian Operations for Global Hope, and we want to hear more about that. She's spent 4 years as a missionary to Romanian orphans with that organization. She now works at Focus on the Family, where she produces the daily broadcast. Jackie, you and I have worked together for many years, and it's a pleasure to have you behind this microphone.
We have, Doctor, and it is always, always an honor to sit at the table with you, so thank you.
Well, let me start with you. What drew you to Romania? I mean, every country in the world has children with
right.
needs.
Yes.
Why did you go there?
Well, I wanted to hold babies, and I wanted to go on a mission trip. I'd been told that if you go on a mission trip, it will change your life. It will change your perspective. And so I was finishing up college, and I knew that that was a very opportune time to go. And so I was looking for a trip, and when I heard that there was a place I could go and hold babies and love on babies who weren't being held and were spending days in cribs without any interaction with another human being, I knew that that was the experience that I wanted to have.
Did you not worry a little bit about what that would do to you emotionally to see little babies who were standing in cribs all day long with dirty diapers and without anyone to care for them or love them.
Yeah.
I mean, they were barely being fed, and yet you were willing to open your hearts to these kids.
Yeah. The Lord had really prepared me for the first time that I walked into that orphanage, because I went with a group of people. There was a team of us, and some people walked in and they held the children, and then they went home, and, you know, they stayed supporters of Global Hope and of the mission that we had, but they never went back to Romania. Another gal on our team walked into that orphanage, fell in love with one little boy in particular, and ended up adopting him. I walked into that orphanage and just felt like I was at home. I felt like I was where I needed to be at that time in my life. And I knew immediately that I wanted to go back. I knew that my future was going to be different.
What did it do to you?
You know,
how are you different now? You said that it it changes you. How did it change you?
I always say that you don't really know what God has called you to or what gifts He's given you if you're not doing anything. So it was just one of those things in my life that I kind of opened myself up to, of like asking the Lord, what would you like me to do? What I looked at myself and said, you know, what gifts has God given me? What passions has He put in my heart? And He had definitely given me a passion for babies. I mean, to this day, I am a baby magnet. I am distracted by them in church, in a grocery store. They come through an office building, someone brings their kids in, I am completely distracted and they have my attention. And that was the way God built me. And I felt like He had been kind of grooming me for that moment. And when He was going to reveal to me, Jackie, I have a plan. I want you to take part in it. And this is what I'd like you to do. And that was that kind of culmination in that moment where I realized I needed to be open for something very serious that the Lord might be asking me to do.
Well, I want you to give us more information in a minute about what you found when you got there and what the scope of the need is. But Sarah, let me come back to you now. How did you get to Romania and why? And as a matter of fact, if I can interrupt myself, you apparently are not a baby lady, right?
No, I do love children, but as Jackie, you said, you had a passion for children, and I had a passion for leadership. And growing up, I always knew I was going to do something big and something outside of America. I used to have dreams of leading children outside of war zones and danger zones, and I didn't know, you know, I was just leading them to safety. And so, you know, I just recall those dreams, and thinking of where I'm at now, I understand that I think God was speaking to me.
Even early on.
Early on. My mom always said, Sarah, you're going to be like an Esther. And my thing is that I'm very much into justice, and I hate to see injustice, and I dislike seeing children suffering, and I knew that, you know, I was going to be on a wild journey.
But children have gotten a hold of your heart now.
Yeah.
And you have changed.
Yeah. Well, I was living with my colleague from Germany, and together we helped rescue three children, one from the state orphanage, which he has adopted now, and two from the state hospital.
What do you mean by rescue them, Sarah? Describe that. You say you rescued three children. What does that mean?
Well, Steffi, who adopted Roxy, she was in the state hospital during the time when orphanages were legal for children under the age of two. And we first met Roxy when she was 5 months old in the orphanage. She was a beautiful child, and she screamed very loudly when the workers would put her back in their bed. And Steffi really had a heart for Roxy. And at that time, you were able to take children out on weekends just to remove them from their situation, because it's a terrible situation to have no love, no touch.
Yeah.
So what I mean by rescuing would mean saving their lives, because you can die without love, without touch.
You can take kids away from an orphanage on the weekends?
Yes, at that time.
Wow.
All right, let's get the setting of these hospitals that you worked in. First of all, it wasn't the same hospital for the two of you.
No.
How far apart?
About 6 hours.
Yeah, I'm not sure in miles, but on a train, about 6 hours, yeah.
And so, you've never been into the other's hospital?
No.
Well, basically, I think, Jackie, you said you were on the west side of Romania, and Sarah, you were on the east side.
Right.
And there were some differences between these two areas.
Yeah, they're very different parts of the country. Where I lived, I was really on the border of Hungary, so there was a little bit more of a western influence there, and quite different from the more rural side of the country where Sarah was.
Okay, Jackie, give us a word picture now. You have arrived in Romania, and you have come to the hospital and begun to work with these children. What did you see?
Well, when we walked in, I remember the first impression that I had was just being surprised to walk into a building where I was told there were maybe 100 and 150 children and not hearing any crying. We came at a time of the day where it was kind of between feedings, and these children, these babies, infants, have already learned that no one comes when you cry. So you think of a building with 100 and 150 children, and you would think that you would hear something. And we didn't hear anything when we walked in. Now, as soon as the closer it got to feeding time, that changed. They do cry when they're hungry. But anytime else, they're just really staring out the bars of their crib or staring up at the ceiling.
Are they only given attention and touch and care?
Right.
When they're hungry?
Right. A couple times a day. Yeah. Basically, you have very limited human resources there. So, you know, the orphanage doesn't have the ratio of workers to children is probably, I would say, Sarah, where I was at, maybe about 1 to 10, 1 to 15. Ooh. And so they basically have enough time to, what I would see when I was there is at feeding time, a worker would walk in with a tray full of bottles, and they would go around and they would take a blanket and they would prop a bottle up for each baby just at the side of their head, you know, put a blanket by the side of their head.
Hold them while being fed.
No. And they would just go around the room propping bottles. And by the time they got to the end of the room, probably 35 children in a room, they would go back to the beginning and start taking the bottles, even whether the children were done or not, because the bottles had to be washed so they could be refilled in another 3 or 4 hours for the next feeding. So they did not get held when they were fed. The other thing is they would obviously get held when they were changed, but that's the same situation. There's no cuddling or cooing or talking or making faces. It's just, let me get this child changed, back in the crib, and on to the next baby because I have a shift to complete, I've got work to do, and I'm ready to go home.
How often do they get changed?
I would say maybe 2 or 3 times a day. It probably varies from orphanage
to
orphanage.
At our hospital, they're changing 4 times a day now.
Yeah.
4 times.
But that's the same picture from our hospital in Brasov. When I first walked in with my colleague, Steffi, there was no crying. There was no sound. Yeah. It was almost like there are no babies.
Yeah.
But the cribs were full of them, and they were just laying in their cribs, just looking around,
at the ceiling,
looking at their hands for stimulation. And it really was an eerie sort of feeling.
It's a little surreal.
Sarah, what happens when you approach one of these silent babies? Do they relate to you? Do they look you in the eye? Do they study your face like other babies do?
They make direct contact with your eyes, and they are speaking to you through their eyes, saying, help me, hold me, love me.
Do they reach for you?
Yes.
So they want to be picked up.
They want to be picked up.
Oh,
they
goodness.
Want your love. They want to attach to somebody. They want to feel the warmth of your arms.
Yeah.
Dad, tell me, as a psychologist, I don't understand the no crying thing. As you know, Lincoln was colicky. Yeah. He cried 24 hours a day. How is it that babies will sit silently and not cry until they get hungry enough to cry?
That is a really important question, Ryan. And I think when we were together before, I mentioned kwashiorkor, which is the name of a of a disorder that occurs when children are not given attention, when they're not talked to, when they're not held, especially when they're not touched. Mm. Touch is critical to everything. It's also called marasmus. These are two syndromes that are known in the field of child development, and a child will never be what he or she could have been for having missed some critical experiences at that time. Language will be affected, and in some cases, autism or other things can come out of that, but it has a devastating effect. Mm-hmm. I also mentioned when we were together that when Shirley and I have been in Europe and in the cities, there are gypsies primarily, other races too, but gypsies that are sitting there with sleeping babies in their arms or beside them. And they're always asleep. And the reason is because they're drugged. They drug them so they don't experience what other children experience. And they have them sleeping there because people will give more if there is a baby there, but they can't take the time to care for them, so they just drug them. And what that does to physical health, to growth, development, what it does to the brain. For a child, and I wrote about this in Bringing Up Girls, the brain of a baby is only 25% of the weight that the brain will be in just a few years. So a lot is going on. It is just exploding with neurons. And if you don't stimulate that child at that time, you lose opportunities that will never return. And so that's what breaks my heart. It's not just what those babies are going through, which is so pitiful. It's that they're losing the opportunity to be what they could have been.
And this is why the volunteers are the key to our project. We need volunteers to come and nurture these children, to cuddle them, to hold them, to love them, to show that they are worthwhile to be in this world. And so this is one of the reasons why I'm here, to promote volunteering and to just give and to offer, because these children, they need other people's love.
So what you are doing is providing that extra care that those children are not going to get. The hospital feeds and occasionally changes a baby. But what needs to take place the rest of the time is what the volunteers do.
Right.
And that's what the groups come over. They just get to come over and hold babies and talk to babies. And
Our volunteers change the children. They feed the children. They hold them. They teach them about play therapy. And the most important is that they love them.
And, Doctor, as you were saying, you know, that is such a critical time. And when the kids get older, they have that against them. So if you can imagine coming out of an orphanage and trying to go to school, you already have the odds just stacked against you, because not only do you come from an orphanage, which has is a stigma attached to it, especially in that community, but you don't have very many financial means, so people know that you're poor. And then on top of that, it's hard to learn, because all of those neurons and brain connections that you were just explaining didn't take place. And so they have a harder time learning to read and write. They have a harder time with social skills because they never bonded with anybody. They didn't get cooed at and talked to while they were getting their diaper changed. They didn't have anybody look them in the eye.
You just think of those vulnerable little babies that God himself has built, has prepared, and yet they're not cared for.
And you know what we've seen in our ministry, Global Hope, we've been ministering in the city of Arad, Romania for 11 years now. And we did exactly what Sarah was just describing, like on my first mission trip. And then the Lord put on our hearts to do something more. It was so hard to put the babies down and to go back to the United States and think, this is all I can do. And so what we did was start a children's home where we were given children from the state. They were placed in our care, and we were under the state of Romania's authority to raise these children. And that's kind of where I got to walk through with them what it's like when you send a child from an orphanage into a preschool. I mean,
You see them start to bud?
We did see them start to bud, but talk about having to be an advocate for these children because the mindset there was they can't learn. These are the least of the community. And we don't want them in the classrooms. What are they going to do to, you know, other parents were worried about their kids being in the same classroom with children from the orphanage.
And gypsies are disrespected.
They
too.
Are very disrespected and yeah. very kind of an outcast in the society. And so it was exciting, though, to watch the Lord bring our kids from a place of really struggling to having someone encourage them and believe in them and see that they could do it. They can do this. And we saw them start to bounce back very, very quickly.
Sarah and Jackie, without the touch, mm-hmm. if there aren't people there, mm-hmm. when the kids do get out of the orphanage, what's their future hold? Mm-hmm. With those types of problems, do they have any hope?
It's very, very difficult. Like I said, they don't have a lot of financial means, and they don't have a lot of social skills.
Yeah.
So that means all of the things that you and I kind of know how to do by the time we get out of high school, like make good decisions about who we become friends with, do a job interview, all of those skills they don't have. Mm-hmm. And so women, girls, young girls are especially vulnerable because the only thing they have to offer at that point is themselves. Mm-hmm. And you see a cycle mm-hmm. of girls who have grown up in an orphanage. When they get out of the orphanage, they have no means, they have no money, they are vulnerable to the first man who comes along and says, "You're really pretty. I'll take care of you." Oh. And then they end up getting pregnant and they end up having children. And then the only thing they know is I'm going to leave my child at the orphanage. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So it's really about breaking a cycle there. And this is the Lord's work. You know, Doctor, you made an indictment against the gypsy community about drugging their babies, which is very serious. But there is truth to that. There is truth. I've seen that. I've seen those children who are sent out to make money and to beg for their families. And I think that's what, especially Sarah, who works with the majority of the people she works with is the gypsy community. This is a job for Christians. Mm-hmm. The world doesn't have the mentality that we have to be able to reach out to these people. They don't have the example of unconditional love that we have. And the gypsy community is especially hard because, like you just pointed out, their values are kind of upside down. Mm. It is so different. And so that is just why it's so important that Christians do this work.
Sarah, is this why you're there? is this why you have heard the call? Because you have seen the same thing that Jackie's
described. I totally share your same points of view, Jackie. What the gypsy community needs is love and hope. Mm-hmm. And they need to also be told that there's a way out of their situation. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love our Teenage Girls Mentor Project, where we offer them hope and love and God, because that's the only person that's going to take them out of their situation.
Sarah, I hate to interrupt you, but our time is gone. But I want to pick up next time right there with that Teenage Project and what you're trying to do through mentoring and the other things that we need to know to understand this problem. And that's just one country. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. Romania.
That's right. Yeah,
it's
just one
all
place.
Through Eastern mm-hmm. Europe. It's all through Africa.
Yeah.
It is in some cases through Latin America. Mm-hmm. And we're immune to it here. Or
exactly.
We're shielded from it. And that's why we're doing this program today. Mm-hmm. Luann, we're going to end this program right where we started it with the scripture.
James 1:27, Doctor. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Mm. And there's two women right here who are making that difference. I mean, the task is monumental, but they haven't let that stop them. They're going to say, "I'm going to make a difference right here with the ones right in front of me."
Ryan, you're being my son. I've had an opportunity to watch you as an adult and as a husband. And one of the things that has impressed me most is your love and care for Lincoln. Mm. I mean, you are a very good father. Mm-hmm. And this discussion today must have touched you in a very sensitive place.
So it does. It does, not only for Lincoln, but because I have nieces and nephews from foreign countries where they were 3 to a crib and they didn't get held. And I remember hearing about Kingston, where he just, it was almost shell shock. Mm-hmm. He didn't laugh. He didn't play. You know, he just kind of stared off into space, and it took a while. But you see him today, and he is a beautiful, happy, he is Lincoln's best friend. They talk on the phone. They're 3, so they don't really say much. But, you know, it can turn around. He's in a family of brothers and sisters that love him and parents who take care of him, and that touch has made him into a new boy.
We're going to pick up right here next time.
All right, let's do. Very quickly before we go, Sarah, I know that you have represented a lot of your heart in a song. Tell us about that very quickly.
Unwanted was written for a 4-year-old boy that was left in the orphanage who wanted one more hug before we left the room. And so he ran right up to us, and we gave him a big hug goodbye, and it really affected our hearts.
Well, Sarah, I've heard your song. I know you had it recently professionally recorded, and it's just beautiful. If the listeners want to check that out, we have that at our website. In fact, Sarah's put this song together with some beautiful photos and images of the children in Romania that she ministers to. Again, her ministry, Firm Foundations. You could get more information at our website, myfamilytalk.com, or Jackie, your ministry, Global Hope. We also have a link to it there for people finding out about the outreaches that both of you are doing in Romania. MyFamilyTalk.com. It all begins right there. Be sure to join us next time when we will continue this discussion with Jackie and Sarah.